you make more jokes at the left's expense
yes.
than I've seen anyone else make, outside of perhaps South Park.
Yeah, and it's not that I hate them as people, because I agree with them on a lot of the social things they stand for. I feel disappointed in them. I'm not disappointed in the older conservatives. Liberals didn't ruin Lenny Bruce. Liberals didn't tell Joan Rivers, you can't say pregnant on TV. That was conservative ideology and family and God and country. You know, but it's turned around, and the people that fought that stuff are doing it. You know, it's like, I know that if I go out and I go, hey, Jesus was this or that, hey, you know, the Catholic League and them are going to get pissed off at me and blah, blah. I get it. That's the way it is with a lot of the conservatives. But to me, the liberals have become different than I remember them, and I feel terribly let down by them in language. Like, the fact is, hey, dummies, you're the one supposed to be defending unpopular speech. Like, if I say something that's repulsive, it's the liberals that are supposed to stand up and go, this guy sucks, but he can't get in trouble for that. But they don't. They're the first ones coming after you. So they've come like, to me, their language policing, they've just destroyed everything I loved about them.
So would you consider yourself a liberal?
Much. I want to be, badly.
Libertarian?
Yeah, but even they annoy me because they don't defend porn. Where were they when John Stagliano was in trouble? Where were the libertarians when Paul Little, known as Max Hardcore, was doing offensive pornography and put in jail with adults? You know, where are the libertarians standing up and screaming that this is, you know, these are adults behaving in adult behavior, and this community standard is outdated?
Hello, I'm world-famous television news broadcaster Brendan McLaughlin, and you're listening to The Homemade Broadcast. That makes you really smart.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Base vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3... 2, 1. It
is the Homemade Broadcast. Welcome to the program. How are you? Good? I certainly hope so. My name is Will Koontz, host of this here show, The Homemade Broadcast, on Radio St. Pete, hmbradio.com, where you can find more content, including the HMB sides, uncensored, exclusively, right on HMB Radio, uncensored, uncut. You can find James Bailey's, my mom's favorite podcast over there, amongst other shows to come. So make sure you check out HMB Radio. Like the Facebook page, facebook.com/HMB Radio. I'm on Twitter, home_made_man. And join us. We got a few events coming up on 12-4, December 4th. It is Winesmith and the Homemade Broadcast Art Show and Benefit for Hannah's Homeless. Hannah's Homeless does a lot of great stuff for the homeless in the area. We got some local artists, including Blue Lucy's Chad Mize, muralist Derek Donnelly, Tracy Tanner is going to be providing some clay work, Julie Brookins, James Blevins, Vanessa Walden Culver, and myself. I'm going to be hanging something. If I can get something done in time, that would be great. But, you know how it goes. Life happens. And it's a free show. A lot of the proceeds of the wine sales and the art sales will be going to Hannah's Homeless. So be sure to check that out. For more info, check out hmbradio.com or the Facebook page for Winesmith. Go give Todd a like. Todd's doing a lot of crazy things. And then what else we got? This podcast is brought to you by Sly Bar. Check out Why I Love the Berg. His name's Sly Bar, one of the top 15 businesses to watch in 2015. Joe and Lauren, good folks over there. We do the open mic there. And Angelo's provides the pizza for the open mic, 536 First Avenue North. Saintpizza.com is their website. Go get a slice of pizza from them. It is delicious. And we have the open mic every second and fourth Tuesday of the month. That is at Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue. $50 cash prize, courtesy of Sly Bar. and, of course, the free pizza. It's free to watch, free to perform, $50 cash prize. If you ever wanted to try stand-up comedy, this is the place to do it. Ask Creative Loafing, Best of the Bay winner for best place to watch comics get better. I may be a little biased, but I think they have excellent taste there. And if you want to get in touch with the program, you can email me at thehomemadebroadcast@radiostpete.com, or you can call me, leave a voicemail, 813-693-2124. That's 813-693-2124. You can insult me. You can do whatever you want. Just don't curse so I can play it on the air. All right. So today we have Rio Paris. Rio performed with us at the HMB Radio Showcase at Don't Stop St. Pete this past weekend. Killed it. Just tore down the house. I think he really did. And he's here sitting with me now. Sorry, Rio, you had to put up with that, doing the reads. I like to get it done early.
No problem.
So what's up, my friend? I've heard a lot about you. You're a Best of the Bay winner yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, Best of the Bay up-and-coming comedian. Was excited about that. It was real cool. I got some texts and phone calls at like 1 in the morning and didn't know why. I was receiving them, and then got a picture, and that kind of let me know what was going on. So just got out the shower and saw like 8 missed messages and 5 texts. I'm like, why me?
Well, apparently it's very well deserved, because that's why I asked you to be part of this showcase. I met you once at the Improv. I did the open mic out there probably about maybe a year ago. I was like, hey, come to my open mic sometime. You're like, okay, I will. And then that was the last I saw of you from you.
Yeah, things got a little crazy. Had a baby.
Oh, no. Yeah. So, was it planned?
Planned by, not by me or, you know what? Here's what I would say, or her. Right? It's something that could kind of happen if you were doing what we do without. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So, but it's a blessing. It's my little buddy, my little homette. She just turned 4 months on the 5th, and looking at 5 months, December 5th. So.
Wow, congratulations. I guess that's the thing to say when you have a baby, congratulations.
Yeah, well, not for everybody.
Yeah, it's a little terrifying. If it happens to me, just say, I'm so sorry.
There we go, yeah. Different responses based on the person, like.
That's right.
Yeah, dude, I'm having a baby. Oh.
Oh, it sucks, man.
You? Really?
Are you sure you want to do this? Well, I don't have much of a choice. Yes, I'm going to do this.
Yes.
Was it kind of one of those things where... Well, like you said, you didn't use things that maybe you should have used.
Right, the preventative
measures.
Right.
Yes.
And so, because playing baby roulette, it happened.
I saw a Vice article. I'm really high on this, and people make fun of me for it or give me guff.
Right.
But I saw an article, the pull-out method is just as effective as condoms.
Well...
Are you here to tell me from first-hand experience that is not the case?
I would say that there may be an inaccuracy.
Yes.
That has been reported, and I plead the 5th from there on out. But there may have been a time where the pull-out method is probably good if you fully... It may be good if you fully follow through with it, but if you have any slip-ups in the midst of saying that I'm gonna pull out, then you may find yourself in a different situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, congratulations.
Thank
about the
you,
baby,
sir.
Man. It is a blessing, you
I
know.
Appreciate
I guess so.
Yes.
So you're from the Tampa area, is that correct?
From Tampa, spent a little time in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Was born there, moved here when I was like 3 to Tampa, and then moved back to North Carolina when I was 9, stayed there until I was 13. Moved back here at 13 and Tampa bound.
What was with all the moves? Military kid?
My dad had a government job that required him to be in Alaska. A lot of black parents.
In Alaska?
Yeah. Like when I was younger, a lot of kids Like, your daddy don't work in Alaska? What does he do for a living? I'm like, I don't know. And even if I did, I couldn't tell you. Oh, man, you don't got a dad. But, yeah, he really was in Alaska, in Anchorage, and came home like 1 month out of the year until I was nine. So that was pretty much what prompted the move. And my mom's family and his family are in Tampa. So it was kind of like, well, if I'm going to be in Alaska, then at least y'all can be around family. And then when we moved back to North Carolina when I was nine, that's when he was like back in America for good. And I kind of wanted to revisit North Carolina a little bit. A little small town called Brevard.
Brevard, North Carolina.
North Carolina.
So what do you prefer, Tampa or North Carolina?
I love Tampa. I really do. North Carolina, like Brevard was good if you like the small town feel and very Andy Griffith show type.
It's pretty
vibe.
Country out there.
Pretty country, all white town, 30 minutes away. They had some favorable things to put in the locker when my brother's high school team went to play them. More directed towards him, so.
Wait, what does that mean?
Oh, there was that word written in the locker room pretty much saying, yeah, we don't want you here. So he still played. It was probably the most nervous that he's ever been. I was nervous just as a kid, kind of in the stands, because you never know.
Yeah.
You never know. They aren't, at that point at least, were not quite. With the times, it was still kind of it could be a free-for-all.
Right. When was this? How many years ago was this?
Late 90s.
Yeah, that seems about right. I think it's come a long way. You're a black fella. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Yes, I am. How do you feel like, because there's a lot of in the world today, it's a mess, dude.
Right.
I feel like, I know this is my opinion as a white dude.
Yes.
I feel like things have never been better.
Okay. things have never been better as far as
I feel like blacks and whites are pretty integrated now. I feel like where you haven't been this cool with each other ever. When can you name a time when it was better than today?
Wow.
I mean, I'm not saying that things are terrific.
Sure.
But I think things are only getting better. And I think through social media and stuff like that, things have been stirred up more. You hear more news.
I definitely feel like stuff is being stirred to maybe create some tension between the two. I also feel like, I mean, compared in America, when you do look at like the history just of, let's say, the civil rights time, when integration happened. And I believe that was bad, of course, with complete segregation. But then I also feel like there were instances where you saw integration and it was very good. Like if you saw people marching with Martin Luther King or marching with Malcolm X, and then you had Woodstock where you had, you know, people of all races that attended. So I feel like there were good times when everybody came together, Hispanics as well. But I feel like there was a feeling of a disconnect in the 80s, like when crack hit black neighborhoods all across the country. And that was just something that as a community had to be dealt with that didn't necessarily involve white people. But I feel like police brutality is at the helm of why the tension exists.
I don't think, though, that it's worse now than it was a couple years ago. I feel like it's more accessible when you hear these stories. They're just more available to you now, and it's more brought out.
I actually agree, because like, black people have been getting killed by cops, and I'm sure.
So have white people, for that matter,
I've tried to search for it. I tried to search. Here's what I think would change the world. Black people have to see a story that is advertised about a black officer killing a young white kid with promise.
I saw that. I there was one not too long ago. I wouldn't know how to find it, but I've seen something similar to that, and there was no coverage about it whatsoever.
That's the whole thing, and the lack of coverage, I believe, is for a reason. When you have a black officer kill a young white kid in the same fashion that is sensationalized on all the media networks, and you see young Dylan or young Timmy Smith, a 23-year-old college student, wanted to work for Google, enjoyed surfing. His dog misses him. His dog goes to sleep next to his picture. And like the black officer gets found not guilty. Like, I think he'll be found dead the same day. But just that initial not guilty verdict, I think, would set America into like a real firestorm.
Yeah, I also kind of feel like it's not really a race thing with the cops. I feel like it's an authoritarian thing because they are killing white people too.
Sure.
And there's a lot of unjustified ones that the cops are just getting off. There was a story in North Carolina, I believe, where a lady cop, there's a 60-year-old white dude, and she was tasing him, and she had the camera on too, which was crazy. And he's like, all right. And she's still tasing him. And she's put your hands behind your back. But she's tasing the guy.
Yeah.
So he's like, please. Like, he literally is begging, please stop. And then she shoots him with her gun. And the guy, he said, you shot me. That was his last words. And then he died. And she went scot-free, with the camera on.
A little bit of protection is in place. But what I think is not necessarily being the connection that a lot of people are not making is the images that have been displayed of blacks being mistreated by cops in the past. Mm-hmm. So it seems like there's just a continuation of that, because what you're stating is true in regards to like what's being the visual that's being put out. So people of all races can be victims of police brutality. Absolutely. But the images that are shown are of black people being attacked by dogs, police dogs, canines, black people having fire hydrants turned on them, black people being beat with billy clubs. You hear about stories like Fred Hampton, who was, you know, the leader of the Black Panthers chapter. Him and his pregnant wife are sleeping in the bed. You have five white officers. They go in the apartment. There's 100 shots. They say Fred Hampton may have fired one time. And then all five cops were found not guilty. So this whole...
This was, what, 70s?
This was in, I believe, the late 60s, possibly, like, right at the beginning of the 70s. I can't recall, but...
Yeah.
Just, it goes to show when stories like this are put out, and a lot of people don't understand Black Lives Matter. I think the idea is that they aren't saying that other lives don't matter. They aren't saying all lives don't matter. It seems like Black lives don't matter if what's being displayed on CNN and HLN and Fox News is white officers on camera killing black men and black women, or you're hearing about a story of a black man or black woman being detained and then somehow they mysteriously die, and then you see the not guilty verdict.
Right.
So the perception would be that black lives must not matter, because if they got killed on camera and it's obvious that they weren't resisting or showing any restraint, yet they still ended up dead, then at that point it seems like a murder as opposed to feeling threatened from a non-threatening individual.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's partly the media's fault, too, because I think that they're trying to stir something up. I don't know why. I think you're right. And I think because it would be – do you remember the riots, the L.A. riots? Are you old enough to remember that?
Yeah.
So I was pretty young. How old are you?
I was young. I was – definitely young, but I remember. So Rodney King, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I was probably 6, maybe.
Yeah.
That got a lot of coverage. And when that whole thing happened, people were glued to their television sets. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes they try to find stories, maybe to try to push things. And can you imagine if there was a race war, how the coverage would be?
I'm ready! Let's do it!
There would be, oh my gosh, there
Vince
would be
McMahon.
So many rings.
Put it together, Vince McMahon, Dana White,
Get Don. What's Don King doing? He can't be doing much.
I know. He needs
get him back out here.
A major comeback. And only in America would still resonate, because that's the only place that it would be happening. Because, like, in other countries, nobody cares. Like, yeah. You don't see. Of course, there's racism that exists, from what I've heard, like in the UK.
Oh, and, everywhere, dude. Yeah. This is not an America thing. There's racism everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's not unique to America.
Yes. And I wish it was, though, because, like, we need stuff that was made in America. I wish we had more. I wish we could claim racism and say, hey, you guys are hipsters. Like, we've been racist
forever. Yeah.
But it's not. And
here, I think it's probably more prolific here because we are such a melting pot here. We have everything in America, and that's what makes it great. But yes. That's what also leads to some of the problems we have, too.
Yeah.
It's not a homogenized type of culture. We're very diverse, yes. And that's great. But it, like I said, it's also going to lead to some issues with race.
It makes it easy to be racist.
It certainly does.
Because like, there are walking stereotypes.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, there's a thin line between stereotyping someone and being racist against.
The thing about stereotypes too is that sometimes they're stereotypes for a reason. They can be broad generalizations of people.
Yes.
And I don't think it's racist to say that. It may be maybe a little bigoted, mm-hmm. but there's a difference, and there's definitely a difference between racial and racist.
Wow. Yeah.
And we can't. There used to be a time where we could talk to each other and we could call each other names and use humor.
Right.
And now you cannot do that because you will be accused of being a racist or a bigot or a homophobe. I mean, there's so many different things. I'm just waiting to get in trouble. Man.
When you just said we can call each other name like that, within that split second of a word that starts with an N, I was wondering, like, well, what are we doing here?
Not on our first meeting, Rio. Right. I'm not going to do that.
There we go.
No.
I appreciate the courtesy.
Yeah.
Rosamond, the town that was 30 minutes away, they didn't, in North Carolina, they didn't provide that same courtesy, so it's good.
I have a theory, too, that I think that the North is more racist than the South.
People from, a lot of black people from the South moved up North, and I believe that the same, because nobody really wanted racism or segregation to end. I'm actually a believer that, and so that's nationwide. I'm actually just a believer that what caused segregation to end was a group like the Black Panther saying, hey, I know I can have two officers. I know that I can have a gun 10 feet away from you. Like, mm-hmm. by law, I can do that. So I think that segregation ended as a result of fear and more knowledge being gained, as opposed to, hey, I really want you to eat in my restaurant. Or just all of a sudden, yeah, you can drink from my water fountain. Let's go to school together. I don't think it was this this joyous decision that was made. I think it was a result, again, of, hey, black people are starting to want to be violent against us and no longer kind of lay down.
Yeah.
So people from all over, you have white people and black people from whether it's up North or whether it's down South, where there's still that hatred.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. There's always going to be, you know, racists out there. I mean, that's just the way it is. You can't, and they want to, people's hearts are in a good place where they try to legislate, you know, laws and stuff like that against it, but you cannot, they're thought crimes. You can't legislate that type of stuff.
Very true. And there's no need to attempt to do so. And it's anyone fighting for legislation for, and that's just in general, I think for any group of people, like people, that group is going to have to stand up for themselves, I believe. And that's for, again, any community. You know, people are being way too offended or acting like they're offended over everything these days. And it's
white people, usually.
Yeah, white people, black people. Black people can take being offended overboard as well. Spanish people can take, because what's really happening, especially in our realm, is running into a joke being told and, ooh, Oh, no. And people actually getting angry.
Yeah.
Like, I witnessed that last Wednesday where, you know, a comedian was just telling a joke about the country. And somebody from the audience was just like, hey, man, I don't like that. I don't like that. You disrespecting my country. It's like, well, it is a joke.
Yeah, and that's the key of it. If you're just joining us, I'm sitting down with Rio Paris. Rio is a comedian. So, yes, and you're right about the people are way too sensitive now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're familiar about this, with this. On the Stanford campus, I believe it was, there's the black students are rallying to have black-only zones. So we're going back to segregation, but the complete opposite. Now they want segregation.
I would not be a fan. If it was going, if we were going to remain segregated, then it just should have stayed that way. Like, I'm not about going backwards. Because now here's the thing too.
But they're calling it progress, which is the crazy thing.
Right, because that's an oxymoron. You can't have progress if you're repeating what happened in the past.
Yeah.
All you're doing is duplicating at that point. So, and oddly enough, similar results could be expected if you choose to do so, which will not be very likely for those black students to be happy with those results. But if you are on that campus and you're able to witness what would prompt them to, if it's a blanket statement, then there's not going to be any progress. If you want it to be that way because of what you're experiencing on the campus, I'm sure they have reasons, but ultimately, just without knowing details, it does seem like they would be going backwards.
And it's hard for me to believe that on the Stanford campus, one of the best universities in the world, mm-hmm. what could possibly be going on? That it's...
Well, so Stanford, definitely known, I mean, right there, a lot of future Silicon Valley CEOs and engineers that will be hired by the biggest tech companies, Facebook, Google. You know, they recruit from Stanford. Now, in Silicon Valley, I think it's like 1% black in terms of employment. So there is a lack of racial equality being shown in that area, at least from a job standpoint. So possibly the students are experiencing a lack of being able to gain employment once they graduate.
But even if that's probably true, mm-hmm. what you're saying. But how would they know at this point? They're still in school.
Right.
How would you be able to tell that?
Possibly opportunities being given, which I'm not a fan of affirmative action, because I feel like if somebody wants to hire someone black, then there shouldn't have to be a law in place to say, you need this many black people to stay in business.
Yeah.
Even that's backwards to even still have affirmative action.
I agree. Well, here's the thing, too, about, like, the free market mm-hmm. is an equal opportunity employer. You're not going to get some guy that's like, oh, okay, I got this person here. Let me look at his resume. Wow, he graduated from Stanford. That's very impressive. Last job he worked, he saved his company $100,000. Mm-hmm. Wow. And he's only going to charge me $40,000 to work here. I'm $60,000 in the plus right now.
Right.
It's a black guy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that happens. I mean, it might, you know, in some cases, but you'd be stupid if you're racist, right? But you'd be dumb. I mean, you're all about profits in a business. You'd be stupid, and you'll go out of business. If you don't want people to, you know, you understand what I'm saying?
I do. By Silicon Valley being 1% black, some changes need to be made because that's more than likely what happens. I think there would be, I mean, there's 3 black CEOs in the Fortune 500, and there's like 24 women that are CEOs in Fortune 500 companies.
Yeah.
So definitely a white male dominated group of the businesses that are extremely profitable and really kind of I don't want to say keep the nation running, but mm-hmm. they are the most profitable. And there's absolutely a lack of diversity.
So, do you think that's because people are racist, or maybe because of what people choose to go to college for, too?
I think it's because there's racism, and I think that it's because it's racism not all the time directly from the person in charge, so let's say the hiring manager, but I feel like there are some thoughts that still exist in our nation and some ideals that would prevent a company from feeling comfortable with the face of their company being someone black, and unfortunately also being a woman. So I don't know if society has advanced to the point where, and I think that they feel that way, that society has not advanced to the point where they can see someone black or a woman running the company and not feel like things are not going to go well with the company because this person was hired based on the color that they are or based on the gender that they are. I don't think we have advanced that far as a society. So, because I think there's more than enough people. Out of 500 companies, we're looking at only 27 spots. So we're looking at, like 27 spots. So what's that, 473 white male or white female or white male CEOs. Yeah, mm-hmm. white male CEOs. So
So what number would you be comfortable with?
I don't know that number. I know that there's more than three black guys who could run the Fortune 500 company in America, and I know there's more than 24 women who could run a Fortune 500 company. I mean, at least let's to start out with, let's crack 100. And then...
So 20%. 20%, that's a number.
20% would be awesome.
Okay. I don't know. See, I like to learn about this stuff because, like I said, I only have my white dude opinion, my own experience, so it's nice to hear other opinions. Yeah.
By the way, for future jobs, I am Samoan. I have checked other my entire employment
That's smart.
History.
That's right.
And when they ask me what the other is, I just say, did I get the job or not? We don't have to go into details.
Who cares? I don't even think they should. Why do you ask that on an application? Who cares?
They want to know because that's also a part of what has to be figured into who is employed by the company.
That's more of an affirmative action thing.
Right. Yeah.
So it's probably hurting more than helping sometimes.
Yes. We have this many other. We have this many blacks. We have this many Hispanics. We have this many whites. We're going to continue functioning because we've met the quota. And
we don't have to hire any more now. And they just throw it. Yeah.
Come on, John. I'm trying. His name's Leroy Jackson. How did I know he was white?
It's a transsexual woman. So
yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, Caitlin in the building.
Yeah, I know. Rio Paris is joining me on the Homemade Broadcast this time. Let's talk about comedy a little bit.
Let's
do it. Since that's what you're here for.
So, love it.
How long have you been in the comedy scene?
In the comedy scene, I say 3 years. I did an open mic in 2011. And on my birthday, happy birthday to me, bombed horribly. I don't know why. Like, I told, and the crazy thing is I thought I had it all figured out. I was like, yo, when I go on stage, the stars will align. I'm about to kill it. This is going to be so great. Like, I'm just going to blow people away. Little did I know, the bad idea started by me thinking that people would like Casey Anthony jokes a week after she got found not guilty.
Well, if they're good jokes, why not?
Yeah, which mine weren't. So pretty much didn't even have them structured in a way like in joke format. It's just more rambling and kind of stating, like, I thought this was funny. The nanny's name was Zanny. So I was like, obviously, by her name being Zanny, it was Zanny the Nanny. She was on Xanax. And people were kind of looking at me like, when is he getting off? Because We want to hear something funny.
Where did you do it at? Where was your first mic?
That was at Side Splitters.
Okay, that's a good place to start. That's really getting into the thick of it there.
Yeah, yeah, Side Splitters. It's cool. Again, did bomb, did horrible, have it recorded just for me to never go back to that. Hopefully the footage is never released. And but then, like, I was bombing more. And
so you got off stage, knew you bombed.
Knew I bombed.
And your feeling was, I want to do this again.
Yeah, I want to do this. Because I didn't think, like, I got to laugh at the end. I would have to watch the video again for what joke I told. But one guy laughed, and that one guy laughed.
Saved
and
it. Saved right. Your comedy career.
Yes. So that happened, and then I ended up doing it more, bombing more. But then there was a competition. And I had put together my Barack and Bill Clinton bit, which was the first time that I really got a laugh. And, you know, my uncle was there. He passed away, got murdered at his house.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, shortly after that. So I'm glad he was able to see me. But that was the first time that it really felt like the comics embraced me. But then I bombed more.
Was this at Side Splitters again?
At Side Splitters.
Uh-huh.
Again, 2011. So I kind of stopped, like, in 2012 and tried to just kind of pursue music, which is something that I also do. But things weren't where I wanted them to be with music, and I still, of course, had comedy in my heart because it's always been there. I recorded my first, like, stand-up tape on a karaoke machine when I was about had to be like 12.
Really?
Yeah. So
how long was it?
It was pretty long. It was like probably like 30 minutes of me.
Wow.
Yeah.
You had 30 minutes at 12 years old?
Yeah. Like jokes that I had written just for me.
Uh-huh.
Me and my dad always rode around and like would repeat scenes from movies and different TV shows. And that was extremely enjoyable. And then I was doing like parodies and class and things of that nature. But 2013 is when I came back, if you will, even though nobody was waiting on me. Like, I wonder where Rio's been. Nobody said that. But 2013, I started again. And I just, it was the improv every week. Improv every week, Side Splitters. I was doing Pegasus Lounge, just any open mic that I could go to. And slowly but surely, as I was working jokes out, people started to laugh on a pretty much consistent basis. And it just felt good, man. I'm really trying to live it and writing all the time and getting stage time. And it's my passion. It's art. I love it. Don't want to do like anything else. Like, it's comedy and music. And that's it.
Do you have, like, a day-to-day job that you have to go to?
I do.
Yeah? What are you doing now?
So, small, medium business owners who want to have a sponsored ad on Bing, Yahoo, or a syndicated search partner.
So, oh, okay.
So I talk to those individuals, whether they want to set it up or they already have an account and want to know what they can do to perform better. So that is my day job.
So what's the 5-year plan for you? Where do you see yourself? And then keep in mind, of course, that it's not going to go like this at all. So
sure.
you can go as big as you want.
Oh yeah.
But what's the 5-year plan?
I see Richard Pryor coming back from the dead. if we're gonna imagine Richard Pryor coming back from the dead, and then George Carlin comes out from nowhere, and they're like, "Good job." I see Sam Kinison screaming at my face, "You did it! You did great!" And ghost saliva flying everywhere. I see Bill Hicks saying, "Wow, that's something that
I wish I would have thought of that."
Yeah, and I wish it's good to see that message was continued. Like, Bill Hicks complimented me on, "No, that's a good joke. I've been watching you."
Okay, so let's bring it back
down. Oh, to reality.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. It's imagination runs wild. In reality, in 5 years, I want to I want to have, and these are just like true goals, all jokes aside, I would like to have a TV show. TV show I have the concept for. Want to get into writing the pilot for that. I want to sell out Emily Arena. I want to be traveling abroad, just being able to do comedy, take care of my family, and just be a household name, and be not only be a household name to be a household name, but someone who the comedy who gets respect from comics as well as comedy fans for just creativity, originality, and the truth that I bring with my comedy. So just well regarded as a comics comic, and the special is what I want to do in Emily Arena. I also want to do a special at the Improv. I follow like so many comics and have read the stories and watched the documentaries. So just want to, and this is going to sound corny, but everybody that I just named that died and more, like I really just want to make the comics that have passed away proud. And that wasn't a joke. Like if they were to be watching, like to say that comedy is in good hands, not only with myself, but even some other comics like from the area that I respect and love, and any other comics around the nation who are true to the art and also want to take things to the next level.
And we got a few more minutes left. You want to hang out for a little bit?
Sure.
All right, cool. But in this last few minutes, the Tampa scene has been growing a lot the past year. In your experience so far, what's been the most frustrating thing and the greatest thing that you found about Tampa?
For me personally?
Yes.
The worst thing for some time was I felt like I wasn't getting any opportunities. And I didn't realize the reason why I wasn't getting opportunities is because I probably did not deserve them. And the greatest thing is to feel like the opportunities have come and are coming because of the hard work that I put in. And I feel like a lot of comics don't know that necessarily.
Here's what I've noticed is that the ones who are good think they're terrible, and right. The ones that are terrible think they are just fantastic. It is amazing.
Yeah, you see that sometimes.
Oh yes, all the time.
Yeah, and for me it was like, I have the Florida's Funniest Finals coming up December 2nd. I'm looking forward to that. Like, definitely, it's been great to participate in that. And I have some other shows coming up, doing Nikki Carr December 13th, going to be featuring.
Where's that at?
That's at the Improv.
Okay.
The Florida's Funniest Finals are at the West Palm Beach Improv. And then I'm at Bonkers Comedy Club for the first time on December 12th in Ocala.
Really good, man. Hey, give out your social media quick, and then we'll head over to the web extended content.
So my company is Lafrican American, and Facebook.com, Lafrican American Laugh, and then FRICAN American. So really on Facebook. And then YouTube.com, if you put in Rio Paris Comedy, you can see videos, and Godfrey and Rio Paris. There's a freestyle video of me and Godfrey at WMNF in Tampa.
Very cool, man. Cool. Rio, thank you for coming on. Stick around. Check out HMB Sides on HMBRadio.com. We're going to record that now.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you very much for tuning in. HMBRadio.com on Facebook, or just HMBRadio, not the .com. Home_made_man. Hit me on Snapchat if you want to send me a picture of your butt, the homemade man. Thank you very much for listening. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.